And now let us turn back to the Content Exchange and talk about the Oregon Chinese Diaspora Project. It's a history project that covers the state of Oregon, an examination and a showcasing of immigrants from China who played major roles in the early days of the state of Oregon, despite rampant racism and even laws banning Chinese people. If you've ever heard our Underground History podcast, you've heard Chelsea Rose, who runs the Southern Oregon University Laboratory of Anthropology and is a founder of the Oregon Chinese Diaspora Project. She's here to talk about a big grant from the federal government to support the project. Chelsea, nice to be back with you.
Oh, so good to be here.
So take us back to the beginning, the origin story of the Chinese Diaspora Project.
Yeah, you know, we've been doing this now since about 2016, and I just can't even believe where we are today. It's so exciting. But it started with just a bunch of us archaeologists talking at a conference, which is, you know, why we have those things, so you can share ideas and kind of inspire each other about the work that we were doing in different parts of the state. And we just started to realize, you know, if we kind of worked together, and in the early days this was informally, we can pool our resources and leverage our expertise and all the different things that we're doing individually and kind of come at this from a more scaled out, wider lens, which might allow us to think about these things differently. And boy, did that work. So here we are, you know, all these years later, and the project is just continuing to grow and expand. And we are just thrilled to have this new, you know, pool of money to help us take it even further.
So talk about what's been done so far. I mean, aside from Underground History, what are the points of contact with the public? How do you push out the information gained from the Oregon Chinese Diaspora Project?
Yeah, one of the main goals was to take archaeology and some, you know, people have been doing archaeology on the Chinese diaspora for over 50 years. But what happens is a lot of that literature is from like federal lands, like archaeology surveys for timber sales or whatever. And it gets kind of siloed away in places that's not easily accessible to, you know, archaeologists, let alone the public. So one of the things we really wanted to do was to really make a commitment to transparency and allowing the public to really join us on this exciting project. So we've done that in a variety of ways. We have a website with tons of content, you know, links to our reports we're producing, podcasts, videos, all sorts of things on there so people can really kind of travel through there and see a lot of the different stuff we've been working on. But we also have been doing field schools to bring students out into the field and train the next generation. We've been doing passport and time projects with the Forest Service, which allows us to embed citizen scientists into these projects. So we're really, and we do public outreach talks, we bring in lecturers. You know, we're trying to kind of capture as many different audiences as possible so that we can really share the new information coming out and the new way that we're thinking about this history.
How has the scope of what you've been doing at the Chinese Diaspora Project been restricted by available funds?
Yeah, well, to date, we've had, you know, amazing and very engaged partners, but we've been really limited to, you know, like some, for example, we did a project down here in southwestern Oregon on the in the Kaskaskia National Monument. So we did a great thing. We were able to talk about, you know, railroads and the bigger impact, but really our footprint was within that property because that was the deliverable we were hired to produce. Same with other partners, forests, state parks. So now, this funding is not tied to specific agencies or organizations or geographical areas, so we're able to really think about the bigger picture and where we could, where we want to investigate that might not come with a funding source. So we have found Chinese heritage everywhere we have looked in the state, even places I definitely didn't think that there was much to be found. And so this allows us to more comprehensively inventory, get boots on the ground and shovels in the dirt to kind of find that data and share it.
Chelsea Rose, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, also the host of our Underground History podcast, the head of the Southern Oregon University Laboratory of Anthropology, and one of the founders of the Oregon Chinese Diaspora Project. And we're talking about a nearly $500,000 grant from Congress in the recent set of spending bills. I hadn't even thought about the idea that the archaeology silos you were talking about earlier, and just now again, too, the idea that when there's a project that goes on, it often requires excavation, or when it requires excavation, they'll bring archaeologists to check it. But that doesn't necessarily mean the stuff that's found is going to be particularly noted someplace or highlighted.
That's right. A lot of times these projects have like some kind of what we call cultural resource management need, but there's not often money or time budgeted in to make sure that it takes that extra step. So, you know, our partnership with the Oregon Historical Society has been great because they're really kind of operationalized getting that information into classrooms and into the hands of educators. And then, you know, a lot of the different partnerships we're building are helping us take that extra step. And again, through everybody pooling their time and energy and helping us, you know, manage and leverage all these volunteers, we are able to kind of bridge that gap between just doing the compliance needed to follow laws and keep things moving infrastructure-wise, and then, you know, getting it out into the hands of the public in a way that's meaningful.
How did you get the attention of both Oregon senators to get this funding boost?
Well, I don't really exactly know. I mean, I just think we're doing such great work across the state. But, you know, it really, we worked closely with Merkley's team, Jessica Keys and Dana Black, and we're really thankful for their help in helping us or in, like, putting together this package and sending it off, and they kind of shepherd it throughout the process. But, you know, we're just really thrilled we got on their radar and that the project is, you know, kind of making the impact that we'd hope, where people are learning about it beyond, you know, the faces that I'm talking to every day.
Well, it's not exactly $500,000 as everybody's been reporting. In fact, it's a very specific figure, short of $500,000. How detailed a list do you have of where that money will be spent?
Well, we came up with a really comprehensive budget, which covers travel and personnel time. We put in line items to bring in speakers from, you know, people that have been doing this work outside of Oregon that we want to, you know, help sponsor come to the state. We're looking at doing exhibits and web content. So there's the budget so far is like a detail of all how that could look. But, you know, this is a first for me. So I know that, you know, we got awarded this fund, but now all the red tape starts. So I think there's a lot of process that's we get to look forward to in the coming months about how we actually implement that funding. And I don't really fully know what that's going to look like yet.
So there's some backwards proof up, like, we did this, you know, you allocated this and we did this with that.
Yeah, exactly. And so, you know, we easily have a million ideas of how this money could be spent. And, you know, $500,000 sounds huge. But of course, the way things are, it, you know, it doesn't go quite as far as you hope, maybe. But it's gonna go a long way towards really hopefully building sustainable infrastructure, so this project will continue on indefinitely as new scholars come in and folks kind of filter through and new stories emerge. So we want to really make a strong foundation so that this project really has some, you know, some shelf life.
Is there a biggest thing you haven't done because of the lack of funding? Is there something that's really at the top of the list? Like, this is the place we want to go, the people we want to explore.
Yeah, there are lots of parts of Oregon that, even though we now anecdotally know Chinese Americans were living and working, there's just not really any information about it. So far southeastern Oregon, there's surprisingly a lot of gaps on the coast, and then the far northeastern Oregon. We want to do some work around Pendleton. We want to, you know, really just put more dots on our map of where Chinese history and heritage has contributed to the development and settlement of our state.
I'm struck every time we talk about this, though, about the fact that it was a diaspora from China and then it ended up being a diaspora back to China, in a sense, because there's not much, I mean, the evidence is there historically, but not much of a population left, and for obvious reasons, for exclusion laws that just said nobody Asiatic, I love that term, could live here.
Yeah, so there is a ramping up of exclusion laws starting in the 19th century and really solidifying in the 1882 Chinese exclusion law and the various amendments over time. And we're now working, actually, we hope to launch an interactive timeline on those laws and how they impacted Chinese Oregonians over time and across the state. And that should be launched in May of this year. So there's lots of factors that impacted why these rural communities that historically had really large numbers of Chinese immigrants have no descendant communities. And that's all part of the story and why it's so important to fully understand this context. And that's the erasure that we're working to, you know, counteract.
Yeah, like a Chinatown even in a town as small as Wairika back in the day.
Yeah, and a big there, Chinatown.
No. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, you know, I've certainly talked to people over the years who got money for timber projects, roads, bridges, railroads. You may be the first person I've ever met in person who got a federal appropriation like this. So what does that feel like?
Oh my gosh, I screamed when I read the email that it went through, and somebody ran in my office and thought I saw a snake. I don't know why. I guess I normally scream in the field when I see snakes. But anyways, I was so excited. It's been a long time coming. And it's kind of one of those things now where it's really overwhelming because we are so grateful that we have this trust and these folks believe in us. And so now we just really want to make sure we get all the pieces together and we do this right. And we can make this money have as big of an impact as possible.
The Oregon Chinese Diaspora Project getting, what is the actual amount? Do you remember it off the top of your head?
Oh, it's like 497,000. You know,
it's just shy of $500,000. But the Oregon Chinese Diaspora Project, coordinated out of the Southern Oregon University Laboratory of Anthropology, headed by Chelsea Rose, who also heads our Underground History podcast here on the Jefferson Exchange. Chelsea, good to be back in the studio with you and not separate from you.
I know. It's fun to be a guest, too.
I bet. All right. Well, take care. And thanks for joining us on the Jefferson Exchange.
Thank you.
Short break on the program. When we come back, we'll visit with Mitzi Asai Loftus about life in the internment camps and since.